Hi, this is Stephen Piercy from Rat. You're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hey, it's Danny Martin from Wicked, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
What's up? This is Sticks at Idiot from Steel Panther, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Welcome to episode 545 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I'm your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 545, we have joining us from the band Steel Panther, Sticks Zadina, drummer extraordinaire, to talk about the band show they'll be doing this Friday night, February 6th, at the Roxian Theater in McKees Rocks, and tickets are still available, so we're going to get you into that interview in just a minute. Coming out of that interview, we're going to introduce you to a band called Wicked, so stick around for that, and I promise you has nothing to do with the movie that is being shoved down your throats currently. So, without further ado, Sticks Zadina of Steel Panther. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome to Iron City Rocks. We have Sticks Zadina from Steel Panther on the line. How you doing, Sticks?
I'm good, dude. How are you, John?
I'm doing fantastic. You guys are going to be rolling in the bus into the city of Pittsburgh on the 6th of December to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Feel the Steel, which hard to believe. It seems like a blink of an eye as a fan, but how has that been for you? Does it feel like it's been 15 years?
It feels like it's been 115 years, John. No, I'm kidding. When you say it out loud, it's very cool. I just remember when Feel the Steel came out and we saw the reviews. At first, everybody's like, oh my God, how could this last? It's a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
These guys are telling, you know, fifth grade jokes and they're wearing spandex. And we're just like, cool story, bro. And look where we are now. We've been doing this for quite a long time and we have no signs of slowing down. So it's very awesome.
Yeah, to put it in perspective, I was thinking back to when this came out, and I think this was one of the only albums I actually paid for on iTunes, was how I got the album. So I'm like, okay, this has been around that long, because I can't remember the last time I either paid for one or bothered to download one. So it's been a few minutes. How was it, like, thinking back, this was kind of an interesting proposition for Universal to put out an album. Did they, like, out of the chute, when you're looking at this from a marketing perspective, obviously this went to number one on the comedy album, but it actually did, got some traction on, you know, the regular album chart. How did you guys approach this? Was it kind of, you know, we're going to do this is sort of a lean heavy on the humor and kind of go for that chart, or did it just end up there kind of accidentally? What was kind of the vision at that point for this?
That's a well thought out great question. You know, with everything that we have done, nothing that we have done has come from a place of, oh man, well, let's try to do this and maybe this result will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So everything we've done from the moment we met to the moment we started playing shows together, doing covers, turning, you know, writing originals, putting them in the show, and then all that was super organic. It was never, hey, we would like to entertain people this way or that way. This is just a culmination of what we, you know, grew up listening to, loving, performing, and you know, we never sought out a record deal, and we were doing these shows in LA and we had residencies in Vegas. We were a working band before
right.
You know, general public really knew us. So Universal heard that there was a scene in LA on Monday nights at the Key Club, you know, we started the Viper, went to, you know, Roxy, then Key Club. They came out and they said, hey, we want to offer you a record deal. And we never sought a record deal. And in fact, we actually were like, well, wait, is this something we want to do? Because we were very comfortable. In choosing to make the record, we made the record with the songs that we had been writing, and we wrote a couple more to round out a record. Everything that we've done has been incredibly, probably more organic than most of the bands I like. Record companies will tailor looks, they'll tailor songs, they'll bring in songwriters. They tried to bring in songwriters for us, and we met. These are not very well-known stories, but we went and sat with Diane Warren.
Oh, yeah, going for the gold there.
Satchel and I went and sat with Desmond Child and almost wrote a song. It was one of those things where they tried to put us in a typical lane, and to Universal's credit, they realized we don't know, this band doesn't really fit in the box, in any sort of box. So after the second record, being on a major, and this is probably a longer answer than you want, our second record, Balls Out, with Universal, we asked them, hey, would you mind letting us go do our own thing? And they were, Monty and Avery Lippman were so cool with us. They told us, and this could be true, but it could not be true. They said, look, you're our favorite band on the roster. And I want to believe that because it's fun. But with their blessing, they let us go, and they've been fans and friends for, since then. And since then we've just forged our own way, because Steel Panther is very unique in the rock world. We kind of pave our own road as we go. So it's exciting, and I'm proud of it.
Styx, I have to say, I've been doing this show as long as you guys have been a band, and that's the first time I've ever heard somebody say something nice about a record label. So you guys are in an enviable situation there.
Dude, I believe what you're saying, because record companies, record companies in general, it's a crummy bank loan. And you get some things, you get a machine that will promote your record, and hopefully people enjoy it and it takes off and you become super successful. But, it's not a good deal as far as deals go for bands. You're giving away so much. But our experience with Universal really, really was, it was a great experience. I'm glad that we signed with them. They do seem to care about the music, though it doesn't seem like it. And it is a numbers game. So
yeah,
I could see how most people would frown upon record companies, but our experience with Universal was really good.
Do you think if you guys had come out, and I think of some bands that were kind of on our radar right around the same time, like Tough had a really cool song with American Hair Band, for example, just prior to you guys releasing this album, but some bands that kind of started in that same time frame doing what you consider hair metal. If you guys had gone into this super serious with, like, lyrics from an 85 Dokken record, do you think you would have had the staying power without the humor?
No, there's no way. I think that it's again, John, you're very thoughtful with your questions. Yeah. I think that had we come out with lyrics that were typical of a band in 1983 or in 1987, I don't think it would have flown, because what we sing about, I think people latch on to the lyrics, and I think the lyrics matter, because we're in a really weird time, and I think when we put our first record out, the really weird time, and I use air quotes with that, was starting around then, but we had been grandfathered in because of what we had established since the 90s, and the 90s were not the really weird time as far as the political correctness. So we became this place for people to to be able to come have so much fun and not worry about offending people. And we just wrote songs that we wanted to write, and it was nothing was ever really intentional. Yeah. It was all super from the heart. And now I think an interesting question would be, if we came out in 1985, how would we be viewed with the lyrics that we have? But I think it could have been insane, because I think our songs are just as good, if not better, than most of the bands back then. And I know that might sound blasphemous, but if you don't think that about your own band, then what are you doing in that band?
Yeah, I can just imagine what you would have to do to get one of these songs on MTV. You'd almost have to kind of tailor, and then maybe it's better, you know, in 2009, where you guys were able to just say, okay, we're not worried about airplay, you know, maybe some satellite radio, but, you know, we're not worried about MTV, we're not worried about terrestrial radio. We can just write songs of escapism or humor, whatever you want to call it, and just go full throttle. You didn't have, you know, an A&R guy kind of leaning over your head, you know, hey, we need a 3.5 minute song to fit in between living on a prayer and, you know, something from Dr. Feelgood. You guys were able to just do what you want, you know, and just let it be, you know, so that it's almost the same freedom Metallica had. You know, they were like, you know, you're not going to get on the radio, so just do what you want. And I think people gravitate to that.
Absolutely. Look at, you know, Metallica, Iron Maiden is a huge example of that. They never got love at radio, and they sell out stadiums. And, you know, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of not playing by the rules, and I'm proud of doing just what comes from the heart for us, because ultimately, you know, we get to keep playing these songs for people who want to come see it, who listen to it, who, you know, may use it as a tool for that escapism, and I'm proud of that. I think it's more satisfying than if we were being told what to do, what can go on a record. We are our true, you know, own bosses, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you're right there, and in front of the fans, you know what they react to live. You know what works well on a record. It's just a great combination. When this album came out, obviously, I mean, you listened to put it on this morning, Death to All But Metal. Any backlash from any of those names? Like, you get a nasty letter from Johnny Resnick or anything like that? Or did people take it pretty well? You know, it's just a joke, and it's kind of like a roast sort of thing, and just kind of roll with it?
Yeah, you know, the guys in, I saw an interview with the guys in Goo Goo Dolls, and they seemed to be very, very happy to have been mentioned, and they seemed to get it, which I think is a testament to their coolness. We ran into, you know, we mentioned Papa Roach in Death All of Metal, and the first year in 2009, we were at the Download Festival, which was the first time we had gone overseas. We're backstage, you know, in our gear, and we run into Colby, and it was so awkward at first. We're like, oh god, is this guy gonna want to fight, or is he gonna want to hug? Because it's gonna be one of two things.
Yeah,
and it was big hugs, and they were super cool, and you know, they get it. And I think most of the bands like appreciated the name check, and you know, look, we were out to kick up a little dust, and we did it, and no one was harmed in the process.
Yeah, no apologies. Can you talk just a little bit about your website, the Styx Industries, and what you do for folks there, just to kind of give that a little plug?
Sure. I mean, dude, I'll be honest with you, it was something that I started during the pandemic. Like, we had all, you know, everybody in Steel Panther went in because, you know, the world shut down.
Yeah.
So we each, you know, took it upon ourselves to go, well, what can I offer?
Yeah.
And it wasn't the collective thing. It wasn't like, hey, okay, you guys, now we got to really calculate what we're doing. So Satchel was giving some guitar lessons online. I came up with Styx Industries because I felt like, what could I offer? Well, I was you know, managing our band, you know, since 2017. And so I offered consultation of, you know, to musicians who might want to start doing that for themselves, because I think at a certain level, bands could really benefit from being their own boss. I think if you're a young band with no contacts, it's great to have people in your corner. And I think if you're Aerosmith and Kiss, it's great to have people in your corner. But there's a middle level where, you know, I think it's beneficial and advantageous to not pay other people to do what you are super capable of doing.
Right.
So I offered business consultation, and I also offered drum tracks. So if somebody wrote a song and they wanted, you know, a real drummer to play on it, they would send me the files. I would record it at my house, and I would send it back. And then along with a couple of merch items, and I wrote a little couple songs thanking the fans. And it was a fun thing. I haven't done anything with that website in quite a long time.
Oh, okay.
Just because we were able to pick back up and start working again.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so like splitting time between the website and Panther was hard. So, you know, maybe someday I'll do it again, but for right now, we're clearly focused on rocking.
Awesome. And are you guys working on a new studio album at this point, or do you guys just kind of put ideas away and sit down and write collectively when you're not on the road, or how do you guys approach what's next?
No, I mean, what's next is, well, you know, promoting Feel the Steel 15 and touring that for a little bit. We're always writing. I mean, it's never okay, guys, let's go write a record, let's go record a record, let's put it out. It's a constant process. Satchel does most of our writing, but we're always sending ideas back and forth, lyric ideas, song ideas. And, you know, if Michael comes up with a riff or I come up with a riff, we throw it in the pot and see what happens. And so it's an evergreen process for us. And then when we feel like we have enough cool ideas, you know, Satchel will demo some stuff up, and then he'll send it over to me. I'll add my flavor, and then we send it to Michael, and he adds his flavor, and then Spider. So, and then we get to a point where the demos are really comprehensive, and then we go in, we track it, put a title on it, and put it out. And so I would say, you know, there are ideas floating around, and we definitely would like to do another record at some point.
Awesome. Well, Styx, I want to thank you so much for your time. I don't want to keep you, but December 6th, Roxy, and here in Mickey's Rocks, just outside of Pittsburgh. We look forward to seeing you guys and just having a great party that night. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, John. I can't wait to see you out there, and take care, dude. Great question.
96.9 Bob FM presents Trans-Siberian Orchestra. The rock holiday tradition returns. Saturday, December 21st, two shows, PPG Paints Arena. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Soaring guitars, dazzling lasers, and enough pyro to keep you warm all season. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, a portion of the proceeds benefiting WQED Public Television.
Thank you to Styx Zadina coming again with Steel Panther on December 6th, Roxy and Theater. We will have links in the show notes. You can get those at Ticketmaster, all the usual outlets as well. We're going to turn our attention now to a band called Wicked. They're from Rochester, New York, which this time of year is buried under snow. We're going to speak to bassist Danny Martin of the band. They've got a great album called Sunburn. It's been out for a little bit now. They toured with Raven, which when you hear the song we're about to play, you could think, okay, that's an interesting mix, but I think it's kind of cool. So I wanted to introduce you folks to the band, and hopefully we'll get them in Pittsburgh before too long. So again, this is Danny Martin of the band Wicked.
Yeah.
good. How are you, John?
I'm doing fantastic. Kind of ironic that I'm speaking to you just a few days before probably the biggest movie of the year, Wicked, comes out, but a little more interested in your record, to be honest with you. You guys...
You and me both.
Yeah, I've seen previews for this. I'm like, to the point where movies aren't made for my demographic anymore, so that's okay. The album... fantastic record caught my attention. And then I saw you guys were from Rochester originally. Can you talk a little bit about how a band coming up in Rochester, I know for a long time it seemed like that was kind of thought of as a place where some really, really heavy bands were kind of coming out of. What was the scene like when you guys were starting out there?
You know, you're dead right on that. Rochester is notorious for having, you know, some pretty heavy music scene, and I think it's just kind of the irony of our career. It's, you know, we were transplants a bit, although we've been in Rochester for almost a decade, but all scattered all over upstate New York. And you know, my brother and I led the charge of creating Wicked and getting the other guys in the band, but we migrated from, you know, a little east of Rochester and the Finger Lake region, kind of settled as kind of like an old school band in one house, you know, mm-hmm. like a team, like bands used to do back in the day. And, you know, to your point, here's this, like, okay, well, we've settled in Rochester and it's a pretty heavy music scene, but we just go, and we just kind of do what we do. And in a way, I find it like a good opportunity to not have your scene so saturated with exactly what you do, because it mm-hmm. helps you stand out.
Yeah.
Of course, you're going to have, you know, resistance and question marks and, you know, all that good stuff that goes with trying to break a scene with something unique. But I like that challenge, and I find it very rewarding, because as we've broken into the Rochester scene, we see like this awesome spread of demographic and walks of life, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when we go and do a Rochester show, we did our album release at Water Street Music Hall at the top of this past year, and it was like you've got people with business suits on standing next to goths, next to punk rockers, heavy metal folks, like just this huge mix, all ages. And it's kind of cool, because
yeah.
then you're starting to realize that people are actually listening to your music and taking it in. And it's not just, I don't know, just a part of a wave of something. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at, you know, I mean, to look at like promo shots and stuff, you think, okay, this is a certain style of music. And then I enjoy the fact that when I listen to it, it's not necessarily visually what I expect to hear right away. I mean, it's, you've certainly got elements of like melodic hard rock, you know, maybe early 90s, dare I say hair metal, but there's a lot more, I think, modern influence into it. And I love the fact that you guys are, there's an ample amount of acoustic guitar in a lot of tracks, which I really, really enjoy, that I think gives this a breadth of, you know, what people would like to listen to. You know, it's a very, I don't want to say a comfortable listen, but it's like you put it in and it's like, okay, this doesn't feel like something new or something bombastic. It feels like, you know, inviting to listen to, if that makes any sense. But it is cool. When it came time to, you know, put these songs together, do you guys kind of talk styles, you know, because obviously, you know, flavors of rock and roll change, you know. I mean, you look at the early 2000s, for example, everybody was Drop D, and
yeah.
if you didn't sound like Creed or Korn or, you know, you guys are kind of in a area with this music where I think of bands, you know, like a Dirty Honey, maybe, for example, who are playing a little more classic-sounding music. But was that a discussion, or is this just something that kind of came organic when you guys just started putting the songs together? There really wasn't a plan.
I mean, I think we're victims of exactly that, right? Like there wasn't necessarily a plan. I mean, we're victims of the evolution of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, grew up as kids, obviously the first flare of our influence and interest that was heavy, although I always like to say we've always been very broadly influenced and continue to be even more broadly influenced. Mm-hmm. But you know, as kids, like when we were coming up, because we've been doing this for a minute, and at a level of like, you know, just cutting our teeth out there playing live. But, you know, we were obviously big hair metal fans, and, you know, 80s rock was the most bombastic, right? Mm-hmm. Theatrical thing as a kid that you could first dig into. But, you know, I've always listened to everything from, you know, that Nirvana, the Tubes, Toto, like you name it, pop music. It's just, you know, I think as a writer, if again, you focus too narrowly, you're just going to get that, right? Like, yeah. You're just going to be a byproduct of your influence. And that's why I try to keep it open, and me and the boys do, right? Because, you know, not every day are we vibing with the same type of influence, and we like to kind of keep it true to like what makes us happy at the end of the day. And,
yeah.
And if the fans and the crowds appreciate it and it speaks to them, that's the bonus. But we got to enjoy it. And so we're 90s kids. So, you know, you've mentioned it a couple of times now. Definitely some of that. I never thought I would say it, but honestly, alternative influence is probably going to be noticed and will be noticed more in our writing. So we just kind of let it do what it does. And, you know, yeah, we look like maybe we visually belong somewhere in the 80s. But we've always grown up, you know, just loving that, you know, leather clad, like, you know, just rock and roll vibe. I mean, that's how we walk around every day, and it's just who we are. So
sure.
I guess it's just feeling comfortable with what you write is our big thing.
Yeah, and it's, when you sort of chat of the 90s, I think of some of the bands in the 90s who kind of felt trapped in trying to write for the style, as opposed to letting the influences of what you enjoy. You know, if you're into the Smiths and you happen to be into Aerosmith and the Smiths and, you know, all these different things, let it come out organically in what you write. That's cool. When you try to say, hey, I want to sound like the last Motley Crue record, I think is when you get in trouble as an artist, when you're trying to produce a product more so than speak what's inside you. So it's cool. Do you guys write on acoustic, or, you know, I listen to some of these songs, even the songs that don't necessarily have a lot of acoustic, I think, but these, they have that flair. And I always love that when you can say, okay, this song would sound really good on acoustic guitar. And there are a lot of songs out there that sound great electric that wouldn't sound good on acoustic. But is that a tool you guys use to write, or is it just someone said, hey, let's layer some of these in here?
A little bit of both, and I'm glad you pick up on that. You know, to your point, you'll hear some have acoustic flares over them in the production and the recording, but, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, when we write all together. Like I said, we live together, built a studio in our our house, and, but, you know, there's a lot of times where maybe we're out on the road, or maybe we're just sitting outside and the weather's nice, and, you know, there's just moments that there's that decision made, and an acoustic guitar will come out. And to your point, it's exciting to see how that can then go and get rocked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even interested maybe in the future of taking some of the songs. And we toyed with this on one of our live shows recently that, you know, felt like it was more of like kind of these chill vibes were being called for. And we took songs that were, you know, heavy, hard rockers, and we completely reproduced them, pre-produced them, and made like these more vibe, like kind of like singer songwriter versions. And, you know, so I just think it's when you're an artist, like you could get into cool, different approaches like that. And if you really love the song and the message and, you know, the story that you're telling, like there's so many different, strokes of, you know, of ways you could paint that. So we like to kind of just experiment it. And sometimes an acoustic guitar could be what brings a very awesome hard rock song out. So,
Yeah. As you're explaining it, I'm thinking when Jimmy Page and Robert Plant did the Unleaded project, and or even like Alice in Chains with, you know, they're Unplugged and Jar of Flies, where some of those songs that you can't say they're not heavy, you know, especially the Alice in Chains stuff, even though it's acoustic guitar, it's heavy. If you don't think it's heavy, you're not listening. But, you know, I think it adds a really nice. It's to me the ultimate compliment on a guitar when you can take a song and just play, you know, one, two acoustic guitars, you know, maybe someone with a snare drum keeping time, and still make it sound awesome. So it really came out well. You guys are going to be doing, I know you've done some tour dates with Raven and some other stuff. Unfortunately, haven't come through Pittsburgh yet, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong. But you're doing the NAMM.
No, not yet.
You're doing the NAMM show in January. Can you talk just a little bit about, is that a little more pressure because Lord only knows who's in the audience at a show like that?
You know, I think at face value, obviously somebody who is logically thinking is going to feel that, and we may have crossed that at a moment. But I'll be honest with you, I'm so excited to get that opportunity to kind of command that stage with what we do mm-hmm. with the Wicked brand and our high energy rock and roll. Now, here's the interesting part of the story is, as you look at it, you know, we're talking about kind of the sound of Wicked and mm-hmm. and all that. You know, if you go and see Wicked live, it's, like I said, high energy rock and roll. I you know, attribute it to bands like, you know, the Helicopters out of Sweden, you know, these bands that command this like very athletic, high energy kind of spectacle, along with the songs mm-hmm. Being sung, you know, and doing the production justice. But we're playing with, this is a heavy metal bill. You know what I yeah. mean? And same with the Raven tour. And I think sometimes, you know, the people who are paying attention might actually catch that and say, like, what's going on there? That yeah. Wicked band, they're kind of like a hard rock alternative band. But I'll tell you what, I had to cross that emotional mental bridge as we went into the Raven, North American tour. And I'm kind of at peace with it because it's, again, such an awesome challenge. And what typically ends up happening is it's almost like a palate cleanser, mm-hmm. One. And then two, you get to win the crowd over. Yeah. Again, nothing's guaranteed. And I love a good challenge, as you could tell. And when we just go and do our own thing and we don't try to like, oh, we're going to really heavy this set up or mm-hmm. not be who we are. It ends up working well for us because people, I think, could see through that that authenticity and honesty. And if you just do your thing and you're doing it well, I think people end up appreciating it, and that's what we end up seeing. So we're super excited to be on the stage with, you know, these amazing talents in Metal Allegiance and the other bands on the bill. I mean, you got the Metallica guys' sons, and yeah. it's just going to be a really awesome night. And I'm excited to kind of get some of the industry eyes to see what we've been working so hard towards and how much passion and love we have for what we're doing. So
yeah, I think you bring up something I think really interesting there. If you try to play to the bill more so than to what it is you guys want to accomplish, you know, that can come off. I've seen some bands do that. You know, they'll open up for, you know, I don't want to name names, but bands who are pretty large who will kind of heavy metal up their set based on who they're touring with. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't always work. I think, you know, sometimes it's better to just be Wicked, you know, in this case, you know, be what you are, and people might, you know, I think when you're playing something and you're truer to the identity of the band, that comes through more so than, you know, let's play our the heaviest numbers, will a little extra gain tonight so we sound heavier kind of thing. I remember speaking with Charlie Starr of Blackberry Smoke, for example, and they were booked to do like a metal festival in Europe, and he's like, you know, do we do One Horse Town? And they did, and he said people appreciated it. You know, I think that's in it because it's genuine, you know.
That's exactly.
I think that's, and to me, I always like it when, you know, you mentioned Raven, and yes, it certainly caught my attention when it said you were touring with Raven, because I'm listening to this, and I'm like, okay, that could be interesting to see the crowd reaction. But I, as a fan, love that when a band, you know, you mentioned a cloud palate cleansing. It's sometimes, I think, really refreshing to have somebody that's just totally different. You know, you want to see a Raven clone open for Raven, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, I would much right. rather, you know, different flavors. You know, I won't even give it a palate cleansing. I'll say a different flavor, and it's still a good flavor. So what do you guys have? I mean, obviously, you've got the record out now. You've got a new single, Hellraiser, which is out, which is phenomenal. And you guys have a series of videos and stuff from the album. What's 2025 hold for you guys? Is it just more on the road, or do you guys go back in and start, you know, maybe doing some more singles, or how do you approach 2025?
Yeah, I mean, so there'll definitely be a few more singles going into the new year, which we're excited about. You know, I think when you're able to, and if you were able to, which I appreciate our setup that lends towards that, is, you know, giving the fans more content for them to consume is kind of the name of the game, in my opinion, because, you know, as everybody always talks about, everybody's got such a short attention span, and it's not like back in the day when you would put out an album and, you know, 2-4 years later come back and do the next one. But,
yeah,
you know, I guess lucky and also a challenge for us is when it comes to writing music and this whole concept I keep talking about living together and just being prolific together, you know, it's hard for us to even keep up with ourselves just because of all the work that goes into, you know, releasing an album campaign. But it doesn't mean we don't try. So we're actually sitting on a brand new album that is just finishing and mixing and mastering. And we plan to have that drop next year. That'll be really big for us. We're super excited about it. It definitely keys into the evolution, but it's keeping us grounded in our hard rock roots with a bit of that alternative flair. And, it's fresh. I'll tell you, it's, you know, sometimes I think the best thing is if you could write some music and then you're like, you want to listen to it more and more and more. It's like, that's a really good sign. And that's really where we're sitting with this. So it'll be a nice mixed bag of, you know, working with our team, which I value very much. We've got a great, very small team and coupling that with a nice campaign with some touring and just keeping going, because truth be told, we're sitting on about 2 additional albums beyond that, you know, or groups of singles and however you want to approach it. So it's like, we've got a lot of music we want to get out there. We just got to keep up with ourselves, really. So
yeah, and I think sometimes the recording and writing is the easy part. You know, it's the all the paperwork and artwork and especially, I mean, you guys, you know, in a situation where, you know, you probably don't have an army at your disposal. You know, you think back to the days where, you know, you would have just thrown this to Capitol Records and they would have put their machine behind it and you would have just been making payments to them for the rest of your life to pay the money back.
But
I mean, this is probably a much better financial deal for you guys in the long run, but it's a lot of work. You know, you have to be masters of social media and there's a lot to it. So I wish you guys all the best.
I mean, and you heard what I said. It's a small team. Just the way you said it is exactly what it is. It's, you know, we're basically doing it all. Everything from the accounting to, you know, the artwork to it's just, I think the nice part about it though, with walking this walk, at least for the time being, is things have changed in the industry. But it also gives you that knowledge and appreciation for what it takes to do these different facets of the business. And I think only until that point where you understand what it takes is the moment that you're armed with enough knowledge for if you do start working with larger organizations or different groups of people that you're able to recognize the right wrongs and be able to check and balance that process holistically.
Yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely. To protect yourself. I mean, because it would be very easy to, you know, and I can't tell you how many people we've had the pleasure of talking to who it's like, you know, there's a love-hate relationship with, you know, the record company, a.k.a. the bank, that they have from those eras. So, you know, I totally get it. Well, I wish you guys all the best with the NAMM show. I'm sure that'll be all over the metal rags. All the websites will be reporting from NAMM. They always seem to. And then without any... With a great deal of hope, we hope we see you guys come through Pittsburgh. I know you did some shows in Ohio last year, so, you know, maybe we'll get a little closer to the burg here, and we look forward to some new music, man. I want to thank you so much, Danny.
I appreciate it, and yeah, we look forward to coming in, and thank you guys for the support once again, and hope to talk to you soon.
All right, a big thank you to Danny Martin of the band Wicked. Again, we'll have information on our website. You can check out to get all the details on those guys. And also Styx Zadinya for coming on the show from Steel Panther. Again, that show December 6th. So by the time you hear this, you need to be making some plans. That's this Friday night, Roxy and Theater, McKee's Rocks. A great, great venue. If you haven't been there, it's completely modern inside. And don't let the horror stories of parking fool you. There is plenty of parking in the area that's free. So you really hard to beat that. So again, Steel Panther, December 6th, the Roxy and Theater, McKee's Rocks. So check that out. You can visit us at IronCityRocks.com if you go to episode 545. We'll have the links to all the things we talked about in this episode. I'll also invite you to check out the previous 544 podcasts if you have absolutely nothing to do. Start now. You can get those done probably in the next year or so. I would appreciate any feedback, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know what you like about the show, bands you'd like to learn about. Maybe you really enjoyed Wicked and you want to hear some more new bands. Let us know. And until next time, I want to thank you so much for listening.